You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
If you enter my mind for any reason, I will twist your head off and use it for a chamber pot. Are you going to arrest me, Garibaldi?
No way. I want to live to see the future.
Mr. Bonova, Mr. Self, anybody else? Shoot him.
We are star stuff. We are the universe made manifest, trying to figure itself out.
All of this was for nothing. Unless we go to the stars.
Boom. Sooner or later. Boom!
Hello, and welcome to the Epsilon 3, a Babylon 5 rewatch podcast. Each week, we review an episode of the 1990s sci-fi TV classic Babylon 5. This week, Season 1, Episode 13, Signs and Portents. I'm Paul.
I'm Dan.
I'm Sean.
And we are the Epsilon 3.
And the synopsis for this episode. A Centauri noble comes to Babylon 5 to transport an important Centauri relic in Londo's possession back to the homeworld. And a mysterious man visits all alien ambassadors, asking them an unusual question. Do you feel lucky, punk? No, that's the wrong question. Written by JMS and directed by Janet Greek. She also did the episode and the Sky Full of Stars. The episode was released on the 18th of May, 1994. The date this takes place is August the 3rd, 2258. The guest stars, Gerrit Graham as Lord Kiro, Freddie Alster as Lady Ladera, Whip Hubbley as Raider Number One, Josh Cox as Tech David Corwin, who pops up in quite a few episodes, and Ed Wasser, or would that be Ed Vassar? I don't know how you pronounce that. W-A-S-S-E-R, Wasser, as Morden. So, guys, what did we think of this episode?
Babylon 5 is finally getting started. It's taken the other 12 episodes to set some groundwork, but here we are. This is what's happening. This is what's coming. This is going to be season 2, 3, and 4. This is the beginning.
Wow.
Yeah. I can't agree more. This is the episode that's stuck in my memory. Everything else we've watched so far from season one has always been like a hazy back of the mind. Just sort of remember this or sort of remember that. Beat for beat, I could remember this episode right down to seeing the little image of Babylon 5 in the coffee cup right at the very end. Just everything about it. This is what I think of when I think of Babylon 5.
Exactly. We're not messing around anymore. We're not going to talk about the people in Believers. We're not going to have some soul hunters. Yeah, we've laid the groundwork. Now it's time for the real serious stuff. Sit back, strap in, and enjoy the heck out of it.
This is probably the pivotal episode of well, certainly season one, but quite possibly the whole season. This is what really steers it in the direction that JMS wants to take it. And it all starts with quite a simple question.
What do you want?
Well, what do you mean, what do I want?
What do you want?
What do I want for supper? What do I want to do this evening?
What do you want?
What do you want?
What do you want?
What do you want? And asked in such a simple way as well, not what do you want? What do you want for the future? What would you want for your people? What do you want in life? What do you want for dinner? It's no context to it at all. What do you want? And ask, you know, in a way where you think, who is this guy? Is he a genie in a bottle, or is he just some bloke going around asking, what do you want?
That's Mr. Morden. Mm-hmm. Ed Wasser, who was actually in the gathering as one of the station techs just on the bridge. And now he's been repurposed and recycled to be the main bad guy, representative of the shadows.
It's his twin brother. That's what it was.
That's got to be what it was. Yeah, they just look the same, right?
It could be the shadows have taken his body, taken him over and reused him. Although you'd think some of the people might actually recognize him, you know, from the station.
Well, he was disgruntled after the dockyard worker thing from the other episode. So he left for a few months, then came back and, you know, suddenly he's got a nice new suit and that's it.
I said just before we came on air, I watched this and I was so engrossed in it, I forgot to write any notes down because it was such a really good episode. And the stuff that was going on, and there's loads of stuff in the background as well, loads of trivia. It's a simple episode. It really is such a simple episode, but it turns the whole universe on its head.
That's the genius of JMS and Babylon 5. It's complicated. There's a lot of backstory.
Yeah, the only point I made was that everything in this episode had to happen. There isn't a single plot, B plot, C plot, name it, whatever, could be taken out. It has to have every single bit, and every part of it has to play out for everything to make sense by the get to the time of, you know, 45 minutes into the episode.
I do like that we see a nice bit of political infighting in the Centauri. The houses are starting to fight amongst themselves,
which was a bit weird. I would have thought Malari, being the man who's very good at playing every angle, would have at least entertained the idea for Lord Kiro wanting to overthrow power. They said, you know, I don't want to see you hurt, but he tries to ingratiate himself on him. So if Kiro is successful, he would have some sort of place by this new emperor's side, whilst also backing the current emperor and sort of pretending as though he's going to stand back and not do anything. He seemed quite firm, saying, don't do it, it's too dangerous.
Yeah, but I mean, he's just some, you know, ambassador on a station, you know, light years away from home. There's probably more people who are closer to Kiro that are going to be more advantageous to him to have by his side, because they are there on the home world. So I can see how he's sort of stuck out in the middle of nowhere, which I think is one of the reasons it frustrates him a lot that Malari can't get back to the home world and can't do what he wants to do because he's stuck on this space station. So that's why he gets all frustrated and says, this is what I want. You know, this is, I want our people to be big again, to rule the galaxy. But I'm surprised that the Shadows don't actually go to the Centauri homeworld and try and find somebody there. Why did they pick on Malari stuck out in the middle of nowhere?
Well, that's because we're on Babylon 5, and that's where the show takes place, and that's where the action is, so we have to.
Oh, you and your literal explanations.
Sorry to break the fourth one.
Don't come at us with your facts, man. Come on.
Oopsie.
No, the Jakar and Malari scenes as well were a highlight for me when they're standing outside the lift and there's that poor guy in between the two of them who I think just him alone after old what's his face, Garibaldi's friend from the other episode where he was accused of terrorism, becoming one of my favorites. I think the guy in between Jakar and Malari is probably one of my next favorite characters just because of the looks he gave them as they were having their little fight, their little spat.
Though I have noticed that your own people have continued to exploit your world's resources to build the mighty non-war machine.
We have to protect ourselves.
By doing to yourselves what you say we did to you. Ah, that's evolution for you.
Now see here.
Take the famine as a blessing, Ambassador, a weeding out of the excess population.
One more comment like that, Malari, and you will become part of the excess population.
Fire! Threat!
Yes, threat!
Now you can go to hell!
And you can kiss my pouch, you!
Now look what you made me do!
Now look what you made me do, when they both say it in chorus and then stagger off. It was just perfect timing. Comedy gold, you have the antagonism, everything, it all works so well.
It makes you wonder how many takes that took.
Yes, yeah. Or if it took only one and that was it, they planned it so well. Mm-hmm. It feels like they knew what they were going into and they were going to just go for it.
You can imagine the rehearsals. If you put in a lot of rehearsals, it could only be one take. It's quite possible they could have done a number of takes, or they could have just nailed it in the first one. I must admit, I didn't find any trivia on that point.
It felt very stagey. It felt like it could be a scene that you could see on a stage play somewhere. Oh, yeah. Of these two characters just having a go at each other with all the layers and hatred and yet the comedy beats all being played out. And we get so much information that there's this famine on the colony, and that there's a war machine, that there's building up, there's tensions between the two. There's even more going on at back home for both empires that we didn't really know until this point. So we're given so much, but all through comedy. And I think it's again, one of the reasons why this is such a good episode.
Yes, it's an exposition dump, but in a humorous manner so that it doesn't feel preachy.
Darling.
Did you see when the Centauri seer came onto the station and collapses after seeing this vision of the station exploding, on the display behind her, do you see what was coming up on the display?
I didn't when I was watching, but after researching, I thought it was very funny, but I completely missed it.
I sort of tried to read it and couldn't. And then when I read the, again, I read the trivia, I found out what one of them said. And when I went back, I actually managed to, I could just about make out some of the others. The display behind her is listing events for that day on Babylon 5, including gravity loss safety lessons, a flea market in Docking Bay 16, and a Rolling Stones farewell concert in the Presley Arena. Finally, in 2258, they finally have a farewell tour. Although it's probably been going on for quite a few hundred years because, you know, they've got to get around the galaxy, haven't they?
Keith Richards is still in the band. That's how.
Yes.
He won't go. He won't go. I did wonder, maybe, is the flea market a flea market as we know it, or is it a sentient race of fleas that are running a market? I mean, this is the future.
It could well be.
Who knows?
It could be relations of the fly.
Exactly. Yeah, it could be like his second removed cousin.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. The Delenn bit did sort of get me later on.
With the triangle forehead thing?
Yeah, yeah. So does that happen ever again?
I don't know. I know that they use triangles for their motifs quite a bit because there's the three castes, and she has at the end of the season where she turns partly human, she has like a triangle chrysalis kind of thing, if I remember correctly. So it's a common theme in the Mimbari race to have triangles, but I don't know if we ever see her forehead flash again.
Mm. It was just thinking of like things in the background and sort of noticing things, and I was just like, I couldn't remember that happening again, and it would kind of get in the way, wouldn't it? Every time that Mr. Morden shows up, he's gonna giant triangle just comes up on her forehead.
Yeah, and obviously she can feel it because she had to hide it. So
yeah, it's a rash, honestly.
It's like a warning symbol that comes up on your car to say, you know, beware, snow, ice. So what did you think of the actual prop that was used as the eye?
It looked kind of chintzy and cheap and crappy.
Yeah, JMS wasn't satisfied with it. He felt it did not look good enough to be like a priceless heirloom. It just looked like some sort of children's toy.
Yeah, a bunch of stuff they put together with spare parts in the supply room.
Mm.
Yeah.
But then equally, it, you know, given what we know of the Centauri and the speeches we've had before from Mallari, I like that, Rams, it would kind of fit that it would be this gaudy piece of horrible jewelry, but because it's all swept up in the mystery and the magic, it's really nothing when you think about it, but what it means to the Centauri is the real power. It's got, you know, it's not got any real value, but because it is this object, it could look as crappy as anything, but they want it, and that's the main thing.
It's a symbol.
Exactly, exactly.
Lord Kiro's hairstyle was actually a mistake.
Oh? Mm. Yeah, because you noticed that the higher-ranking Centauri have higher hair, and then the underlings just had really short hair. So that must be a thing.
That was the idea. To me, it looked as though it had been cut, whereas Mallari sort of just naturally fades into, you know, its length of hair. Mm. Kiro's looked as though it had been chopped.
Mm.
And I think in the trivia, it comes up as Lord Kiro's hairstyle was actually a mistake. Among the Centauri, one's social status is determined by the length and styling of the hair. Upon hearing this, the hairdresser made the wig the greatest length he could. Later wigs used more styling and finish rather than size. Now, I didn't think it looked any bigger than the Mallari's. And I think what had happened is he made it big and then they cut it down. Mm. Hence the reason it looks as though it's been chopped. Yeah. It finishes in like an edge.
Yes.
Whereas Mallari's, if you look at it, just sort of fades away.
Mm. It seemed more upright, almost like it was more like a peacock. And I thought maybe that was just, you know, the angle of it is somehow denotes more importance and things like that, and because Mallari is a little bit less important, that's why it's leaning back. I thought that was a design choice, but yeah, after reading all the stuff, it's like no, it's just an accident.
Morden's name was partially inspired by the Latin word mort, meaning death, and when Lady Ladira has a vision, she's standing next to a monitor which is advertising activities on Babylon 5. The events include 0G shuffleboard, and the Gravity Lost Seminar, and the Mojo Mind Rave. Mojo was the nickname of Adam Leibovitz, the studio's visual effects artist, who probably put all of that lot in. And of course, this is the first appearance of the Shadows.
Mm. Yes.
And we find out that Kosh is not a big fan of these people.
Yeah.
No, and somehow his encounter suit got damaged, but he's not saying how.
That's really strange. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, no obvious way it would be damaged either, because he did actually bump into Morton, told him to go away.
Leave this place. They are not for you. Go. Leave. Now.
And of course, we know the Shadows are always with Morton. They're always there. We just don't see them in this episode, but we do later on.
Mm-hmm. It was clever the way that when Delenn looked at Morton, he went into shadow.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was a great visual effect. And I don't think I appreciated that the first time around, but I did this time around because obviously knowing what's coming on, what's coming ahead, made sense. And I thought, ooh, that's a nice touch. So at this point, I think it would be a good time to take a break and go for a promo for another show on the ESO network.
For the past 12 seasons, Mike and Mike have been bringing you a weekly look at all things geek, with reviews, discussions, interviews, and topicals from across the geekosphere. Now, with geek life slowly returning to normal in 2021, join the Earth Station One crew as we look at the return of the summer movie season, preview the fall TV lineup, look at all the big conventions now happening, along with other geek topics. You can listen to Earth Station One wherever fine podcasts are found, and as always, Earth Station One is a founding member of the ESO Network.
Okay, right. Welcome back. That was a good promo.
Very good promo indeed.
So, spoilers. Now, I'm putting this in. I know everybody's probably either watched it or listened to it or seen it or something, but I'm just going to say now, if you haven't and you want to go back and watch it, there's going to be spoilers in the next couple of minutes. So, the mural in Commander Sinclair's office is a visual spoiler about his character. Now, I missed it. I missed it the first time and I haven't gone back to check it. From right to left, a vertical line of aeroplanes symbolizing Sinclair's descent from a family line of fighter pilots, a triangle, which is sacred to the Mimbari people, which have these three castes, and a circle symbolizing Sinclair's eventual fate as a time traveler. I didn't see that.
I don't recall this at all, actually.
Prophecy. No. Yeah, again, it was one of those ones where after reading it, then I went back and watched, and then I could notice. But it's just like all the background stuff in the bar as well. Until it's pointed out, I don't think you would notice, but it's nice that it's there.
I don't know what your the quality of your pictures like, Sean. I haven't got my DVD, so I've lent them to my dad, so he's watching them. So I'm watching it off a computer download from the DVD. So a lot of it is very fuzzy and not a good quality. It's certainly not Blu-ray or 4K qualities or even HD.
Yeah, no, I've got the DVDs from about 2002, 2003, and I'm watching it on a Blu-ray player, and it's still a little bit fuzzy.
It may be one good thing that comes out of this reboot. It'll all be in 4K and nice high-quality stuff. You know,
so. Might be time to upgrade.
Lady Ladera's vision is a warning about what could happen to Babylon 5 if Babylon 4 was not sent to the past.
Mm. But it disappeared. What on earth could they be talking about? Why is it called Babylon 5?
It's a nice round number. It was a good idea at the time.
Yeah, exactly. I did like that there was the little clue when he said that I don't believe her visions because on my first birthday, she said that I would be killed by shadows.
Yeah, foreshadowing.
In any other episode, that would just be like, oh, she was a dodgy old lady. You know, he's just ignoring her. But the fact that in the same episode they paid it off, I just love that it all came together. It's like, ah, that's what it is. He got killed by shadows. Yeah, and then loved it. Absolutely loved
clever.
I love it.
So near the end of the episode, Garibaldi and Sinclair are using the restroom. They sterilize their hands and start to walk out. Once they reach the part of the hallway that has an obvious men's room sign, they stop for a second when a female pushes past them, when clearly the only place she could go to by going in that direction is into the men's room. neither Garibaldi or Sinclair stop her or even question her passing. Yeah, this woman walks past them. They sort of give her a glance and then they just carry on walking. Where the hell is she going? Is she the cleaner or something? I don't know.
Nobody assumes gender anymore in the 23rd century. That's what it is,
except,
of course.
Except for that big sign that says men.
Yeah. No, that's fine. That's fine.
If Hanover's morning message at the beginning of the show states that the day is Wednesday, August the 3rd, 2258. However, August the 3rd in 2258 will be a Tuesday. Maybe there's a galactic leap year in the middle of those.
That could be it.
Yeah.
I thought about checking that too, but I didn't.
I haven't. No, I'm just reading trivia. I must admit, I haven't fact-checked that at all, but I could do. So, Star Trek connections, do we have any?
We do have one, actually, yes. Lord Kiro, played by Garrett Graham, was on two episodes of Star Trek. We know him, of course, as one of the Q in Star Trek Voyager's Death Wish, where he played Quinn. Mm-hmm. And in one of the very first episodes of Deep Space Nine called Captive Pursuit, the one with Tosk, he played the Hunter.
Mm.
I got to say that one of my favorite quotes from the show was where Londo says,
"I want to stop running through my life like a man late for an appointment."
I had to write that down. I thought that was excellent. And I could relate to it highly, too. So that caught me.
Nice. Yeah. It's a good quote. Yeah. Yeah. So ratings. We do our ratings out of five jump gates because it's Babylon 5. Now, IMDb gave this, are you ready for this, guys?
Mm-hmm. Ready?
8.5, which in our terms is 4.25.
Yeah.
That's fair. I was tossing between 4 and 4.5. So 4.25 does seem appropriate to me as well. It's really good. It's excellent. It sets up a lot. But there's so much more good stuff coming that I don't want to give it a 5 right away because there's so many other things that in season 2, 3, and 4 are just absolutely fantastic. So yeah, I'll agree with the IMDb trivia gods and I'll say 4.25.
Dan, what do you think?
I'd like this episode. It's stuck in my brain for a reason. There's so many episodes that I have forgotten or there are parts that I can't recall. This one, like I said at the beginning, is beat for beat. I could remember everything that was going on, the fact that we were going to see everything, Kosh being Kosh, Delenn having her sort of secret past sort of revealed. You have Jakar, who gives a very personal vengeance filled response to the what do you want, but it's Londo who wins out because he's got the grandiose way of looking at it. He just wants to return to power so that he can then do the work and get the power for himself. It's not a personal vendetta like Jakar's. It's Mulari's just got the bigger plan, so that's why the shadows latch onto him. You've got Lady Ladara, so you're setting up so much more, but you've also got the payoff for all the times you've had the pirates show up in all the other episodes. They've got, you know, a ship that's capable of creating its own jump gate, so there's more tech, there's bigger tech out there that is now going to cause problems in the future. You see the attack wings being used properly, like a fighter pilot should use them, with Sinclair ordering them in from the side and in from the other side. There's tactics, there's character moments, there's just Ivanova waking up and asking why her mouth tastes like munching carpet. I'm not going to say anything about munching carpet. It's just, there's so many points that I love about this episode that I couldn't give it anything less than 5 out of 5. I am giving it my perfect rating. I love this episode.
Wow.
I totally agree with everything that Dan said, but I don't want to give it a perfect score just yet because I know better things are coming.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm with Dan and obviously Sean. Funny enough, I think I'm going to sit in between the two of them. I think 4.75 for me. I think it is a huge, huge episode. We don't realize it at the time,
no,
but it is huge. But with that benefit of hindsight, this is a pivotal, absolutely pivotal episode. It's got everything. It's got the Ivanova quote. So Dan just said that one. I like the way the computer then says, well, why does my mouth always taste of old carpet in the morning?
Unknown. Checking medical logs.
I'd like to know if there was an answer to that. There is a fantastic Lady Ladera quote. Mm-hmm. The future is always changing. We create the future with our words, our deeds, and with our beliefs. There is a possible future, Commander. and it is my hope that you may yet avoid it. I think that's a cracking quick, and that to me is what the future is. Yes. It's what we make of it by doing what we do, and what happens, and the future comes along.
Best episode so far.
Yeah.
It certainly is. It's the highest that we've rated. It's the highest that IMDb has rated it. What can you say? It's just phenomenal. Mm. So for those of you who have been listening from the beginning, you will know that we have decided to do a watch order that is a JMS watch order. Now, at this point in the order we've been doing things, we've been following pretty much the normal standard air date order, and also the Lurker's Guide order, which is the one that we are following. At this point, however, the next episode should be TKO, which would be on your DVDs or in your streaming service. However, the watch order that we have, which is JMS's watch order, says that we should now move on to Grail, and TKO moves back to about episode 22 in the Epsilon 3 release order. However, if you are listening to this, catching up many years after we have already created this podcast, then you can skip ahead, if you wish, to episode 22, where TKO will sit, and then you can pop back to episode 16, which will be Grail, and continue from there. The choice is yours. However, in the meantime, why not send us some feedback at theepsilon3@gmail.com. That's 3 spelled T-H-R-E-E, not the number. Or you can find us on our Facebook page. Just search Facebook for The Epsilon 3. That's the end of the episode. Join us again next week, where we will be discussing Season 1, Episode 14, Grail.
The future is always changing. We create the future with our words, our deeds, and with our beliefs. This is a possible future, Commander. And it is my hope that you may yet avoid it.
End.
Lights and good night.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.